Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
Miracles will happen when you move forward. And one guy jumped into the sea, and guess what? The sea split. Now, whether the sea split or not, in actuality, is, you know, an academic argument. Historians can argue that. Religious people can argue that. But the key wisdom teaching here is that when you start an enterprise, you're going to hit the sea of reeds and an advancing Egyptian army of some kind. It's just going to happen. That's number one. Number two, you always continue moving forward. That's when the miracles happen.
Here's the one.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Zip, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella's story out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. Hey, your good buddy Josh here. Just want to bring this quick public service announcement to you. You know, sometimes right when you're done a show and you get to do one of these intro pre-rolls, all you want to do is just encourage people to realize the unique types of conversations they're about to hear so that they push through, get through this episode, and grab all the golden nuggets. Grab them all. Like Lucky Charms, that little Irish guy that runs around rainbows, okay? And he finds pots of gold. That's what it's like if you join us for the entire audio mastermind that is your Capital Hacking. Well, Levi Brockman is your guest today, all right? He's your new friend. He's sitting there in your car with you right now about to share something I think is awesome. So this guy is famous for writing a book called Jewish Wisdom for Business Success, okay? Grab it right now online. Jewish Wisdom for Business Success, Lessons from the Torah and Other Ancient Texts. Well, that's part of what we cover today, but I know him as a crowdfunding entrepreneur. He's created a platform called Invone, I-N-V-O-W-N, Invone.com. And he's going to share with us why that is a passion for him. He loves the idea of letting non-accredited find ways to invest in deals, especially real estate. He and I actually do a deep dive into whether or not it would work for us at Accountable Equity, or perhaps something else we're working on. Stay tuned. So if you want to hear like a real deep, you know, remember we used to call these deal real dives, you know, where we're actually negotiating a deal. Well, this is a deal real dive. I hope you enjoy it. You might also want to know that Levi is a PhD from the Australian Catholic University Business Certificate from the Yale School of Business, CEO and founder of Invone, as I just mentioned, author of books and 1,000 articles, father of five, and happy to be a fellow GoBundance brother. Remember, if you're ever considering joining GoBundance and want to find out more about it, you can reach out to us at Capital Hacking, or you can mention us when you do your inquiry, because if you let us know that you referenced us as a sponsor to you getting into GoBundance, there is another secret special package that we offer to every GoBundance new member who comes through the Capital Hacking tribe. So just let us know, email me or DM us, and we will offer you a whole extra bundle if you join one of the programs. So in the meantime, he's one of our GoBundance brothers, Levi Brockman. I think you're going to love this show. Well, Levi Brockman, it's great to have you on the big show. Glad you're here.
Pleasure to be here, Josh. Real pleasure.
Well, you know, we did the intro here a minute ago, but I love the background. You know, you followed your professor to all the way to Australia, but you're not from Australia. Where are you from? Would you mind sharing a little more about yourself with the audience who hasn't met you yet?
Yes. So Levi Brackman, I am originally from London, England, which is where I was brought up, North London, and moved to the United States in 2005. The first thing actually I qualified for was as a rabbi. So I actually have three rabbinic ordinations. And then some point along the way, I got into helping youth because nonprofit work, you know, there's a pretty quick and easy transition from being a rabbi to nonprofit work. And I started an organization called Youth Directions, helped kids figure out their purpose in life. That led me to a PhD in psychology, which is how I ended up in Australia doing a PhD. And along the way, got really fascinated by data science and AI, got a job at a tech company. And all the way along the way, I was investing in real estate. And at some point, as I was buying a new property here in Connecticut, I moved here for a job with Priceline. I started thinking really deeply into the whole home ownership. Who makes money really off home ownership? And is it really a good deal for homeowners and just for the regular folk? And I realized that so many people have their fingers in the pie in home ownership. And, you know, and the people who really have the raw deal are the homeowners themselves. And I ended up starting Invone, which was to help try and solve that problem. And it's morphed into not only a marketplace where homeowners, if they would like to, can sell a piece of the equity to the general public, currently if they have their houses in LLC, but also anyone who owns a real estate or wants to own real estate can raise money against that real estate, even, you know, sponsors and other kinds of owners who have cash flowing assets. So really it's a two-sided marketplace, but on the one hand you have the owners and sponsors of real estate deals, on the other hand you have investors who can invest in these deals. And I started that thinking about it in December 2019. And we literally just launched the marketplace a week or so ago.
Well, I know there's a couple topics we want to get into today. And one, you know, let's make sure we cover the idea that who gets the bum deal is the owner. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and maybe challenge you. And then two, hear more about Invone. How do you pronounce it? Invone?
Invone. Yeah. Invone. Best in own.
Invest and own. So we're going to talk more about Invone. But, you know, earlier you and I were at GoBundance and you talked about raising capital through crowdfunding. Yeah. So I'd love to cover all three topics today and dig in to the why we're doing these types of things in life. And, you know, another fact that we brought up in the intro is that you have 1,000 articles. Now, what are the articles typically about? What would the internet know Levy Brackman as? Which topic?
I used to be a writer, and actually I'm author of a book which was published into 8 languages, and it's called Jewish Wisdom for Business Success. As a rabbi, you know,
I like that.
I had an opinion on everything. You know, I gave a lot of sermons, and I ended up writing for a Israeli newspaper called Yediot Ahronot, and they had an English language website called ynetnews.com. And I was a weekly columnist for them. And I wrote about everything, you know, you name it, I've written about it. And I haven't done any of those writings for a while, but yes,
Let's start there though, because that's so intriguing. So the topic of your book was the Jewish Wisdom for Business.
Business success. Yeah.
That's, first of all, right there is where I want to dig in, because I'm very much, I try to learn from all cultures and I love the Jewish culture. So can you teach us what would be the number one article that got the most traction in that? Well, that was a book, but then you wrote articles. So what topic do you feel was the number one topic that you got traction on?
You know, unfortunately, when I used to write articles, the ones that I got traction on were those where I was being controversial.
Sure. So,
and those weren't the ones I was most excited about writing, you know?
Okay.
They were usually, you know, so if I wrote something which was, you know, about one of the hot topic issues, you know, maybe about gay marriage at the time or something else, that would gain a lot of traction, usually because, you know, somehow it upset somebody who didn't agree with me and ended up being called all kinds of names. But, you know, that's just to be expected. This was like quite a while ago. So when I was writing, it was a time when you were a writer and then everyone became a blogger and everyone was a writer. Right. So.
How about the one that you're most passionate about from the wisdom, the Jewish Wisdom for Business Success?
So that book, you know, there's lots of really, really key teachings in that book, for business. And there are people who've told me, and I was actually just in Oxford. My brother lives there. His daughter got married, and there was a professor from Oxford University who read the book, loved it, and he was going to kind of bring it into his lectures. So, because there are a lot of, like, it's really interesting. The Bible is this age-old book. You know, it's been around for 3,500 years, and it's generations upon generations of people have read it and have gained insight from it, which has helped them in their lives. Some people consider it a sacred book, others don't, but whichever way you want to put it, this is a book which has tremendous wisdom in it. And so all I did was I took the ideas from the Bible and I tried to relate them to life and to business in a way in which the average person could use. And so one of the lessons, really at the very beginning of the book, talks about facing your fear. You know, fear is the greatest inhibitor from success in anything. And it's, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're starting a real estate career, for example, or you're looking at you want to break out, do something different, and make something greater for you or your family, etc. That's really kind of moving into freedom. So it's like the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, and they had the great emancipation of the slaves. So I talk about this story of what happened. You know, there was miracles that took place, and all these plagues upon the Egyptians, and eventually the Israelites are freed. Now they're free people, and they go out into the desert as free people. And what's the first thing that happens to them? The very first thing that happens to them. They're caught between an advancing Egyptian army on the one hand and the sea of reeds on the other hand. And they're going to be sandwiched between these two. And it's like, it's over. It's over. And they just became free people. And now it's over for them. And anyone who started a business or an enterprise can relate to this. You know, you start, and everything's really exciting. And then you hit your first real challenge and you look at it and you say, how am I going to get out of this? This is really hard. How am I going to get through this? And there's a key piece of wisdom here, but it's terrifying, right? Terrifying. I don't know. I could lose it all. And there's, like, in contradiction, there were four opinions of what to do about this amongst the Israelites. They're on the Sea of Reeds, the bank of the river, and there's four opinions of what to do about it. One says, you know what, let's just pray to God. God helped us so far. He'll help us go forward. So we should sit down and we should pray. Another opinion was, no. Praying to God's not going to work. We were saved before. Let's just go back to Egypt. It's not a big deal. We know that life. It's okay. You know, go back to our W-2 job. It's fine. You know, we go back. Another opinion was, let's fight. Now, fighting the Egyptian army would have been, you know, these nomadic tribes and former slaves. It wouldn't have been a good idea. They would have lost. But they said, at least let's go down fighting. And then the fourth opinion was, let's all just commit suicide. We won't give them the joy and the pleasure of taking us back to Egypt or of fighting them. We'll just kind of all give up here and commit suicide. Four opinions. These are four reactions to fear, right? Let's go back to our W-2 job. And let's just give up. Let's go back and somehow fight this, but it's a backward motion. We're fighting backwards, right? Whenever you fight, it's a backward motion. So what actually happened was they turned to God and turned to Moses, and Moses said, no, you move forward. Miracles will happen when you move forward. And one guy jumped into the sea, and guess what? The sea split. Now, whether the sea split or not, in actuality, is, you know, an academic argument. Historians can argue that. Religious people can argue that. But the key wisdom teaching here is that when you start an enterprise, you're going to hit the Sea of Reeds and an advancing Egyptian army of some kind. It's just going to happen. That's number one. Number two, you always continue moving forward. That's when the miracles happen.
I am writing notes feverishly, and I'm so impressed. So, to summarize, the Jewish tribes could have gotten to the Sea of Reeds and had four opinions: pray, give up, fight, or suicide. And Moses says, "Let's just move forward. Miracles will come to those who move forward." I think that is very compelling. But your book is famous for other themes as well. Things we talk about on this show sometimes, you know, we don't use the expression you use, but removing ego from the equation.
Yeah.
Overcoming ego to seek humility as a strength is something we talk about. What in the book
could we take as a snapshot of that concept, the removing ego? What are you proud of about that topic?
You know, it's interesting. I wrote this book in 2008. So this was a long time ago. So, you know, you're jogging my memory, but you know, it really is this whole concept of servant leadership. You know, it's like so in vogue, servant leadership today, so in vogue. But if you look back in the Bible, I mean, servant leadership, that's what Moses was. He was a servant leader. And that was his whole concept, was a servant leader. And it was never about him. This is like really nice little story of Moses and his father-in-law. So Moses, you know the story, Yitro? So Moses and his father-in-law, basically his father-in-law was not in Egypt. He lived somewhere else. And, you know, but he heard about these miracles that occurred. And Moses had become like this really big leader who was doing these miracles and leading this nomadic tribe. You know, he made the news. So his father-in-law wanted to check it out. And he showed up, you know, in the desert and where in the encampment. And he meets with Moses. And Moses basically invites him and shows him around. And like all good father-in-laws, Yitro has some opinions to share with Moses. And he basically tells him, no, you're doing this wrong. You're doing that wrong. You're doing the other thing wrong. And he says, I advise you to do this and that. Moses could have easily said to him, like, who the hell do you think you are? Excuse me, did you lead? Did you take on the Egyptian army? You know, just like the America of the day. Was that you? You led people through the Sea of Reeds. You stared down the Pharaoh. You know, who the hell are you to come and give me opinions? But that wasn't his response. His response was, hey, you got a good point here. Actually, I'm going to implement these changes, because it was never about him, right? It was always about how can we make the enterprise better? If you think about the enterprise, what was the enterprise? The enterprise was, you know, these free people. You know, it was the concept of freedom itself, which was at stake. And it was never about him. It was always about how do we make that enterprise better? And therefore, it doesn't matter who it came from. His father-in-law showed up and told him some truths. He listened and he followed.
Well, listen, this is already one of the more unique shows we've ever done. I'm so excited about this show. So I'm just going to dabble. First of all, I did not ever hear that story about servant leadership out of Moses before, but you nailed it. That is a culture that we believe in for our companies, you know, is servant leadership. So the whole idea being, if you're willing to serve, you're taking the responsibility to serve those that report to you, and they actually go on your shoulders. What was the other, you know, there's several themes in this book now that I know. Harvesting the power of positivity is one of the other themes. I've never thought about harvesting the power of positivity as coming from the Torah or being embedded in the Torah. Could you share one example of that from your book?
Yeah, you know, so it was really kind of, I don't know if it's directly in the Torah itself that I bring it from, but there's definitely this concept in the, you know, Jewish wisdom for, it was called Jewish wisdom for business success, lessons from the Torah and other ancient texts. So it's not all lessons from the Bible, but there's definitely a theme within Jewish mysticism of positive thinking. Actually, there's one of the great Kabbalists talking about, you know, if you think good, it will be good. And then there's this really interesting kind of in the Talmud where it says that every thought, speech, and action that you take creates an angel that actually helps you along the way to get to the aim of that thought, speech, and action. And so therefore, you know, be careful what you wish for is this kind of concept. Think about it as an energy, right? You can think about it as angels, which is written in the Talmud, as it talks about angels, or when the commentators talk about angels, but really it's like, think about the energies that these create, thought, speech, and action, thought as well, right? So if you think negatively and you think that things aren't going to work well, you're actually creating energies which actually kind of will take you in that negative direction. Whereas if you think positively and you think things are going to happen, you're actually creating energies which will help you get to those in that direction as well. And, you know, so this whole concept of positive thinking, you know, there was, what was that book called? I forget what the
Power of Positive Thinking.
There was another one, which these are all ancient ideas.
Think and Grow Rich.
Think and Grow Rich is one of them. This, I can't think of them, but they were, especially back in the 2000s, it was very, very in vogue, the whole idea of, you know, think yourself.
The secret and all that. Law of attraction.
Yeah, the law of attraction. But these aren't new ideas. These are ancient ideas. And, you know, one of the caveats I have in the book is, like, you can't just sit there and think and it will happen for you. You've actually got to take action as well. Action is very prized, yeah. You know, in the Jewish tradition.
Yeah. This is riveting. Now, does your book at all cover the idea of legacy? You know, one of the things we care about, you have a beautiful family of 5 children.
Yeah.
Which, how old are the children right now?
My oldest is 20. And my youngest just turned 8.
Okay. So, you know, I got you beat solidly, right? I have a 22-year-old lady and a 2-year-old little man and 5 more than you do. So we're up to 10 nowadays. But 5's a healthy number, my friend, healthy number. So teach me about teaching our children. What wisdom did you write about in your book about legacy?
You know, I'm not sure that I covered that. But I have a podcast actually called the Wisdom for Business and Life podcast. And this episode, I'm talking about this concept of aging. You know, our society has this backward. You know, youth, we prize youth as being something so, so special and so important. When and old people, like, they're over the hill already. You know, we don't have the respect for older people that we ought to. And really, you know, in ancient traditions and in some other traditions, like apparently in Japan as well, older people are actually much more respected than younger people because they have wisdom, they have life experience, and it's priced to be older and to have this wisdom. Younger people will seek out older people for their wisdom, and so we have this really kind of backwards in America, where somehow we think youth are special. I'm not saying they're not special; everyone's special, but you know, young people make a lot of mistakes. And people also make plenty of mistakes too. but you know, what is the legacy? It's really, I didn't have anything in the book about necessarily about legacy, but I do think a lot about as I get older, and you know, I'm in my 40s, but as I get older, I think a lot about like how I need to change my mindset with regard to age. I know my father, right before he passed away, legacy all of a sudden became something he was very concerned about and spoke to me about. Ultimately, in my view, the day I die, I know that I'm going to ask myself just one question, and that is, was humanity better off for my existence or not? And that question really drives every decision I make.
And what about the children, though? So right now you're raising a good number of, like, young. They're still young, mm-hmm. only 2 adults or a few adults. Do you transmute that through things like work together for others? Do you do charity of some sort, or do you, you know, what kind of things are helping you transmute that power of connection?
It's a great question. As I think about, you know, when I was a rabbi and practicing, my kids were very much a part of that, you might call, ministry. Today it's a little bit more difficult to bring my kids into the work which I do because it's a technology company and little kids, but we encourage our kids to help out in the community quite a bit. So my daughter, for example, she's 12 and she does a lot of babysitting, and she'll often do babysitting for free. That's and awesome. You know, we encourage her to do that, not always charge the parents for the babysitting. So, you know, often she'll go and babysit and then she'll say, no, don't pay me. This was just because I wanted to do a good deed. So we encourage our kids to do that kind of thing as well. And, you know, we have a lot of guests over. We try and find people who could really benefit from being guests. You know, in the Jewish community, there's a lot of, there's everything's around food and community. And there are people who don't have family. You know, so to open up your table to those kind of people is also something which we do as a family.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at AccountableEquity.com.
This is MC Lobster, the Cashflow Ninja. And if you want to increase all forms of capital in your life, you must listen to the Capital Hacking Podcast.
You know, jumping back into some of the cool things that we have to get to, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you for being our rabbi here today. We appreciate that. Now,
I'm no longer serve as a rabbi.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's it's hard. It's a great gift you've done. So let's talk about Invown, INVOWN.com. Yeah. So Invown has been a bit of a labor of love for you, correct? When did it begin, and how would you describe it to the person off the street?
Well, it began we incorporated it in February 2020. I incorporated in February 2020. I started working full-time in September 2020. In many ways, it's a labor of love, but also there is the intention of building this into a very substantial business. So this is not a charity. This is, we have every intention of building this into a marketplace, which is not just world-class, but it's being able to be used by literally anybody. Really what it is a two-sided marketplace where anyone who owns real estate, and ultimately the goal is anyone who owns real estate, including homeowners, can offer up to investors a portion of their real estate and therefore the profits. So if it's a professional real estate owner, so they'll have tenants, et cetera. So then there's cash flow associated with it and potentially appreciation. If it's a homeowner, maybe it's just appreciation. Maybe there's some cash flow too, if the homeowner wants to give it. But the idea here is to allow anyone who owns real estate to offer fractionalized real estate to investors. And our goal is to create an efficient marketplace where you have two sides. Money's flowing both ways, and we are the ones who facilitate those transactions.
And with the idea of, let's use the example of the commercial idea, where there are rents. Let's say it's a house, but it's a house for rent, and it's $300,000. We put it on the marketplace, and 10 people say, I like the idea. I'll give you $10,000 for some my pro rata share of distributions. Yeah. Does that, you know, because our whole business has been with the world of syndication and using the Reg D exemption of the SEC, where you can do equity sale for different classes, like you can do it for accredited investors. I can. Yeah. Other people can do it for non-accredited investors if they already know them.
Yeah. 35.
So tell me how this plays into that. Does it become one of those models?
It actually uses a separate model called the Reg CF. So basically, anytime you raise money for real estate and people are buying into that, they're buying something which they hope to get profit through their efforts of others. So therefore, it's a security based on how it's run. So therefore, that security either has to be registered with the SEC or has to use an exemption where you don't have to register it. So you have a 506C, which is only to accredited investors. Some people use that exemption. 506B, where you can't advertise it, but you can have 35 sophisticated non-accredited investors. Or you could use a Reg A, which means you actually register with the SEC, and it's a kind of a small mini IPO, and it's very expensive to do. I think someone told me they did one and it cost them $200,000 all in. So that would be very expensive. You could raise up to $75 million. Or you could do a Reg CF, where you could raise up to $5 million from anyone, from the public, and you can advertise it. But it has to be done through a funding portal or a broker-dealer. And we're a funding portal. So basically, anyone who wants to raise up to $5 million from the public can come to us. And we have, you know, we're a member of FINRA. We're registered with the SEC. So we are legally allowed to offer or facilitate these offerings to the public. So that's the regulatory framework that we use.
Yeah, so we're going to deep dive into this. This is really the meat and potatoes of this show. So let's talk about that. So for everybody who heard Levy explain it, he did a great job. But to break it down again, when you the simplest way to understand any security is it means, first of all, you've heard securities, everybody. You've heard it when you talk about mutual funds or buying Amazon stock. These are called public securities or public equities. Well, now take that and go all the way to the world of more small and private deals, even bigger, but private deals. They're still called securities. So they're still under the Securities and Exchange Commission of the United States. But the way real estate deals typically get done is with this Regulation D exemption, meaning an exemption from filing, because you're going to follow certain protocols with a private placement memorandum, with limiting the number of investors and or limiting the people who invest because they're accredited. You know, as Levy, you said you did well. One is called 506C. That's when you can publicize it and let anybody in, but they have to be accredited $1 million. Or B, as in boy, means that it's basically people you have a longstanding relationship with and are 35 total head count. There is this other one. We've done a few shows on it, Levy, but not to the extent we hope you'll teach us. So crowdfunding. We've all heard that expression, but what you're describing is the actual true form of crowdfunding called Regulation CF, Cat Frank. CF, teach me real quick, from soup to nuts, how you got involved in this CF category. Why'd you do it? And how does that work? And why is it so different than Regulation D?
So RegCF was really set up initially for startups. It was to be able to raise money. You know, basically, if you could get in early on Facebook or Google, would you not have done it? And the problem was it just wasn't available for you to get in on. Because it was at that point, the only people able to get in there were accredited investors. So they, you know, President Obama at the time came up with this thing, and his administration, Congress came up with this thing called the RegCF, which basically allowed small companies to raise directly from the public. At the time, it was only $1 million you could raise a year. And that was it. So you had, it was called RegCF. And as long as it was done through a funding portal, and really the funding portal, which is what we're designating as, it has a role in making sure that there's no fraud going on. And so the real fear here is of allowing just regular people into private deals is the possibility of fraud. If anyone's been on the internet, on Facebook, and has been hit up by a million people trying to sell them crypto, this, that, and the other, you just know there's a lot of fraud there. And unless you have someone overseeing it, there can just be a lot of fraud. And the average person doesn't know how to navigate that. So what this law says is that if you've got a funding portal, the funding portal's role is to navigate it, to make sure that there's no obvious fraud going on. Now, it's still in private investments, and therefore the SEC consider any private investments to be highly speculative, even if it's real estate. So it's still private investments, but what our role is to kind of make sure that we do bad actor checks on the issuers, to actually do some due diligence to make sure that everything's represented clearly and properly, and that there's some kind of protection for the regular investor. So that's the role of the funding portal. And we had to go through a pretty extensive vetting with FINRA before we were allowed to start doing this. So RegCF then, therefore, if it's, sorry, go ahead.
I'm taking notes, my brother. See, I have my pen in hand. No, I don't want to interrupt.
Well, thank you. So RegCF is based out, then that was $1 million. It wasn't really relevant to real estate, especially bigger real estate deals. $1 million a year is not really enough money. But that moved from $1 million to $5 million in March of 2021, and it became a lot more relevant to real estate. So initially, we were just going to be a crowdfunding platform for homeowners. But then as it went up to $5 million, this became relevant also for commercial real estate owners as well. So therefore, we opened it up to anybody. So anyone who wants to raise, you know, typically syndicators are using 506B, 506Cs, and there isn't really a funding portal yet created specifically tailored to allow real estate people to raise capital. And that's what we've built. So together with that comes, you know, all the legal documents that you need, you know, as a template. So usually 506B, 506C, you'd have to go to your attorney and it costs you $15,000, $20,000 to have legal documents. We have all those templated. At the first deal, which we went up there, the person who ran it paid no legal fees because we gave them all the templates. So our lawyers basically created the templates, and then we know how to put those. The Form C, which you file also with the SEC, we have the all templated. And so really, we're we as a funding portal are one-stop shop to help you get your entire deal up there in front of anybody. Now, it's not just a non-accredited investors. People make that mistake. It's also accredited investors. So accredited investors up to and including non-accredited investors can invest.
Couple interesting questions, though. So let's dig in here. You created the portal. You have the FINRA. You maybe explain that to us for one more minute. We're going to talk about the positive. So far you've said some positive things, like it's accredited and non-accredited can be in there. The sponsors can advertise. Those are the yes. complicated two things, right? Normally you cannot advertise unless you want only accredited. So you're allowing those nuances. $5 million is a reasonable amount for some types of deals. Yeah. So those are all pros. You also talked about templated legal forms. So now what are the initial cons? Those are all sounding very good so far. So what would you say are the negatives compared to other types of private funding?
It's a maximum of $5 million. So it's not more a year in any 12-month period. And it goes all the way up to the sponsors themselves. So it's not per entity. It's all the way up to the sponsors themselves. So for some
So let me repeat that. So if I couldn't do two $5 million deals a year.
Correct.
Okay. Could the deal stay open for multiple years, or does it have to wrap up in a year?
You could leave it as for as long as you would like, but it wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't make sense, right? But once you close the fund, how long are there any rules about it has to be a five-year closed fund? How long can the fund last after the investment period is over?
Well, you set the terms. As long as you tell people, so the deal we have right now is a seven-year deal. Now, you have to hold the securities for a year, and then you can sell them and transfer them. So the idea is that, you know, once you buy these securities, so once you buy your share, your LP share in the deal, then you have to hold it for a year, unless the owner buys it back from you. But you can't transfer it so there's at least a year holding period before you sell it.
Okay, because you just threw out a whole new concept. You're talking about the concept of selling the paper.
Yeah.
As a paper holder, meaning you own a fraction of a bigger thing, call it a big commercial building, you own $100,000. Now, can someone actually own that sizable amount, or is it things like $5,000 investments, $10,000 investments? What are the range of investments people can actually make in the $5 million fund?
So we will start off, depending on what the sponsor wants to do, we'll start off at $250. So, you know, we're talking about retail, non-accredited investors. So the one which we have up currently, the minimum is $1,000. So again, like the minimum also comes down substantially in a Reg CF offering. You know, you've got a 506B or 506C, often the minimum is going to be $25,000.
Yeah. I mean, the negatives there would be the pros are you're creating a wonderful base of great people that are excited about your projects. I love that. That's how we run it at Accountable Equity. We have hundreds of investors, but the negative is that that's a very low threshold to get involved in, and those people may have questions. Yeah. So if they seek questions about the deal, by the time we pay a colleague to get on the phone call more than one time, we've probably lost money, meaning we've spent almost as much.
And it feels they're like. They're not supposed to. As a matter of fact, in Reg CF, you're not allowed to call the sponsor. It all has to be done on the page. So on the page, if you go on Invo, you'll see the deal at the bottom. There's conversation between investors and the sponsor. So, and any question you ask actually has to be available to everyone to look at.
Okay.
So if you have questions, it's all done on the page, and then the sponsor answers it, you know, in their time.
So, how does your platform compare to other platforms? Like, there was a platform that reached out to us a year ago called Republic.
Yeah.
That was offering something similar. Yeah. Tell us how you've distinguished your platform from those.
So Republic is their crowdfunding platform as well. And they have so they're like a horizontal. So they have, you know, lots of different types of deals they'll have. Startups, they'll have other types of deals, and then they'll private deals, and they'll also have real estate. And real estate is just one of the crowdfunding platforms which has real estate. They don't have a lot of real estate deals, but they have a few, and I can understand why they would reach out to you. we are only real estate. So we're designed specifically only to do real estate. We're a vertical, just real estate for RegCF. We don't do prop tech. We don't do startups, just real estate.
What about real estate equity versus real estate debt? Could you create a fund that's a lending fund?
Yeah, we will do that. We will do debt as well. Right now we're starting off with equity, but yeah, we will do debt as well.
And you know what's interesting about debt? And now let's talk about the debt, meaning you would own, Billy and Jenny would join our crowdfund. They would be owners of the fund. They would actually be equity holders of a debt instrument, correct? That's correct. Would then go out and create debt. And that's always a mind bender at first. But let's talk about the way it's calculated. So you said we might have a $250 limit, a minimum, or a $1,000 minimum. Let's assume we choose $1,000. Yeah. Can anybody come in and just say, I want $50,000? Yes. Or do they have to verify their income to get a certain amount?
It's a great question. They don't have, there's no verification needed. It's all self. There is a question when you check out your investment about, you know, if you're accredited or not. And if you're not accredited, then there is actually a maximum that you can put into crowdfunding in any given year based on your income and your assets. But that's all something which they don't have to actually show any evidence of it, but they have to self disclose those things.
So say they put in there, we make $95,000 as a family.
Yeah.
Isn't there like a calculation that crowdfunding says, okay, so let's use $100,000 family income. What would be their legal limit that they could invest?
I think it's up to 5% of their net worth or 5% of their income, whichever one's greater. That's what I mean. Check it out.
So for example, it might be that they could only invest $5,000 off of $100,000, unless they had $500,000 worth of wealth, then they might be able to do $25,000.
Exactly.
Okay. Very interesting. Those are the things that I've heard as the cons, right? That even if you do it, we all love the idea of letting everyone in who loves the deal, no matter whether they're accredited or not, because we believe in personal freedom and independence. And if you decide this is good for you, great. But there are rules right now for me. So I've often thought about crowdfunding, and the pushback from my team, our investor relations team, has always been, well, actually a couple of things. One, smaller amounts, but a lot of people may have a lot of different challenges over time, the misunderstandings or questions. Yeah. Two, that there is a ceiling on how much everybody can invest. Because if that person loves crowdfunding and their limit is $5,000, the $100,000 family, and they like the two crowdfunding deals, they would only be able to do it up to $5,000. So they might only be able to do $2,500 with me because they already did $2,500 with somebody else, right?
Yeah, that's correct. However, if they, and that's to protect them from putting too much of their money into what's considered to be highly speculative investments. So that, and those people, you know, it should we really be asking them to put a lot more than that into these kind of deals? It's a question. If the people have a higher net worth, if they've got a net worth of, you know, $500,000-$600,000, then they can go much higher than that. And again, this is themselves, they have to self-report this, so that there's no real policing of it either.
Let's talk about if someone clicks that button and says, I'm an accredited investor.
Yeah.
What happens then to the top limits? Are they allowed to do more?
Accredited investors can invest however much they want.
Okay. So there you go. So there is still a benefit to the accredited investor who uses crowdfunding platforms. Got it. Now I understand. Yeah. And what's the distinction between this type of crowdfunding platform and the other one out there, like Yield Street or something like that? Only accredited, right?
Yeah, they're basically online syndicators, right? So that's what I think about them. They're syndicating. So they create up roll-up vehicles, and they're creating syndications. So they're much more like, you know, they're Reg D's. Some of them have a Reg A's, I think. That's the key difference, is they're for accredited investors.
So Levy, you know, one of the things you said to me that was challenging, but positive, but challenging, is every one sponsor can only do one per year up to 5 million.
No, they can do as many as you want. You can do 10.
up to $5 million.
In aggregate, it can only be $5 million of fundraising. But you could do a 506c together with the Reg CFs on the
same deal. Teach us what you mean.
So in other words, let's say you need to raise $20 million, right? And you had accredited investors who could give you $15 million of it. But you had $5 million, which you opened up to new investors, non-accredited, or just anyone in the public, and you want to be able to advertise that to anybody. Who knows who would pick up? Then you would do your 506C and go to all your high net worth people, and they would put in, you'd have your $15 million, and then you'd have your Reg CF for everybody else. So it's quite common to have a 506C and a Reg CF side by side. So one for your accredited investors who are putting in a lot of money, and then you can raise up to $20 million.
What is the weird thing, though? I have this weird memory of when you do a Regulation D, 506C, that when and either everyone has to be accredited to invest in the fund, you're talking more like side by side, right? We go out and buy one big building. We need $20 million bucks. 15 of the equity comes from the Reg D fund and $5 million comes from the other. And we buy one big building, correct?
Yeah. Well, you could, it doesn't have to be one big building. In any deal, you could have a 506C and a Reg CF together.
Okay. You but it can't invest. It's like this, though. The Reg CF can't be an investor in this 506C, right?
If you're unaccredited, if the person's not accredited, then they can't be an investor in your 506.
Right. Right. Okay. So it's almost like a brainstorming because we do funds with multiple assets. So we could call the fund, but we just call it a fund. And then how would we? So let me give it to you. You're the business genius. You have Jewish wisdom for business success. So I would love to learn from you, Rabbi. Isn't that great? That's even all. I've used all of your talents in one sentence. So Mr. Crowdfunding Genius. All right, let's talk about a fund. We want to go out and do a certain type of things. We're getting into build-to-rent short-term rental. We want to be the largest short-term rental build-to-rent type of people since we're already deep into hospitality anyway. So short-term rental build-to-rent communities in Texas, which is actually something on our drawing board. Maybe we want $25 million worth of equity for that project, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. Could we go out and raise $20 million in the regular 506C and $5 million in crowdfunding to equal a total of $25
million? Yeah. But one caveat is, and this is just going to get super technical, is that a investment company cannot raise using Reg CF. Now, that usually isn't relevant to real estate because usually the funds, people call them funds, but they're technically GPs. In all their deals, and as long as they're GPs in all the deals, they're not a investing company, according to the investment company.
Because let me describe how we do it. So, Accountable Equity is our brand of asset management, and yes, we are the GP sponsor. However, we do create small funds that have their own brand name. And they are managed by Accountable Equity for asset management. So are we considered the GP in your definition, or are we considered a fund?
I'm not a lawyer. You'd have to ask your attorney. But according to my attorney, as long as those individual funds, they call them funds, as long as they're GPs in the deal rather than LPs. So an LP would be, you don't have any involvement in finding the deal. You don't have any involvement in managing the deal or any of those things. And you're just expecting profit through the efforts of others, then that's the definition of an LP. Then
you did a good job explaining that. So I think you're right. I think we are GPs. I mean, we call ourselves GPs, but I think by that definition, we also correspond to that. So now back to the idea of a $25 million equity bucket. Mm-hmm. You're saying have two different entities in there. One's called the $20 million accredited fund and one's called a CF.
They don't have to have two. They can have the same entity. You're just doing two using two exemptions, as far as I understand from my attorney, right? You have kind of the same entity. It could be the same LLC, but they're just using two exemptions to raise capital. One is a 506C, which is, and everyone has to, who comes in, who's accredited, needs to be verified they're accredited. And then you have your Reg CF where people don't have to be verified. It can be just anybody, and they come in through that way, and it's all invested through a funding portal. So you might have your regular portal, whatever company you use. I don't know. What company do you use as a portal?
Well, we use, we manage IMS software. Okay,
so investor management software. That. So your credit investors will come in and invest through that. And then for other people who don't, either they don't want to go through a verification of accreditation, or they're not accredited, you send them to the portal and they invest through the portal.
I'll tell you, I'm really interested, buddy. So the one thing about your business model that's interesting, so say I sign up with our companies, I'll sign up with you, INVOWN. We can only do 5 million a year, but I think we'll attract much more than that. So you would need a lot of sponsors, because how do you earn a fee off of our crowdfund? Where do you earn a living?
Well, there's a commission of the investment coming in, and then there's a cost of capital. And you know, that hasn't been fully decided to what it is yet. Right now we're waiving it for the first number of deals. So the first few deals that are coming on, we're waiving the cost of capital. But there is a commission which is paid for investors as they come in. And the portal costs money to run.
Because you are a broker dealer.
We're not. We're a funding portal, which is like a mini online broker dealer, which allows people to raise capital using Reg CF through our portal.
You explained that pretty well, as far as we can understand. I mean, is there anything we didn't cover that would help us understand this even better today as we're coming to the end?
You've been a fantastic host. really good questions.
Well, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you for having the right, in-depth answers as best you can, and using a few caveats there about the lawyer. I love that. I love, we're not lawyers. We're not CPAs. This is not legal. We're investing advice. We are seeking understanding together. But we appreciate everything you've shared so far. Now, how about the friends and families and the thousands and thousands of listeners? How should they reach out to you if they're curious about what you do? What's the best method to follow up with you?
So INVOWN.com, INVOWN.com, is made up of invest and own. INVOWN is two-sided marketplace. Levy at INVOWN.com. Now, Levy is spelled L-E-V-I, like Levi, like the jeans. My parents kind of they called me Levy, but they spelt my name Levi, just to confuse everyone. No, it's really the Jewish, Ashkenazic Jewish pronunciation of Levi is Levy.
Got it.
They spelled it Levi. So Levi at INVOWN.com, reach out to me. Our inaugural deal is up there. People can check that out as well. If they want to invest, they can. We can't give any investment advice or tell anyone they should, but definitely check it out. It's 4 single family homes in North Carolina in a suburb of Charlotte. And it's actually built by builders. So it's being built at present time. And then he's going to rent them out. So that's what the sponsor is going to do with those. So check those out. Anyone who's a sponsor, especially like one of the things I really have a passion for is people starting out in real estate, either on the investing side as LPs and want to start and build up a portfolio, or they want to buy real estate and want to kind of raise capital for it, but don't know how. I want to help those two people. Those are the two sides I want to help. You know, the people who are well-established, they've got their connections, they've got a lot of wealthy people who are backing them. They don't really need us that much. They have millions of dollars coming in. Right. But there are people who want to start off in this business and need to raise capital. Want to help those people, or even if you're somewhat established, but want to bring in new sources of capital. So we want to help those people, and then people who want to get into real estate, but just don't have the time to buy real estate. Or don't have the money to buy real estate.
So just the website's the best way to reach you, as you said, as well as the email. So thank you so much for being on the show. We look forward to having you back.
All right. Thank you so much, Josh. Real pleasure.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome.
Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life. And thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week. And we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to. And we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility.